The Agriculture, Conservation, and Resiliency Subcommittee will now come to order. Missy, please call the roll.
Chair Buchanan?
Here.
Vice Chair Roth?
Here.
Ranking Member Skidmore? Ranking Member Skidmore?
Present. Chatting.
Representative Abbott?
Here.
Representative Alvarez?
Here, ma'am.
Representative Antone?
Here.
Representative Bartleman?
Here.
Representative Otana?
Here.
Representative Brackett?
Here.
Representative Usada Cabrera? Representative Cassell?
Here.
Representative Cheney?
Here.
Representative Esposito?
Here.
Representative Punchowski?
Here.
Representative Mooney?
Here.
Representative Steele?
Here.
Representative Trunell? Representative Tuck?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Members, before we get started, I just want to make sure to remind everyone that they make sure they move their electronic devices to silent or turn them off for the duration of our committee meeting today. Members, today we had scheduled two presentations around the citrus industry, of which one of our presenters is actually under the weather. So we'll just have one presentation today from the Department of Citrus. And we have one bill that we will be hearing today. And so what we will do, we'll start with the bill. We'll bring up Representative Kennedy to present HB 109, State Park Campsite Reservations. Representative Kennedy, you're recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Buchanan, Vice Chair Roth, and Ranking Member Skidmore, I am happy to present to you today HB 109. HB 109 is a basic consumer-friendly bill that will allow Floridians just a little extra time to book a campground reservation. So currently, reservations are offered on a rolling basis 11 months ahead of time for everyone. So today, February 8th, 2023, everyone in the country is able to make reservations for January 8th, 2024, 11 months ahead. Now, camping reservations, especially for very high demand parks, are extremely difficult to obtain. Now, my interest in this is personal. I'm a teacher, and I've spent a lot of time with my students leading expeditions and camping in some really interesting locations. Now, camping gives Floridians common experiences with the beauty and the diversity of the ecosystems that make up our great state. Now, not everyone is a camper, and that's absolutely fine. But when people get out there and they actually experience the beauty of bromeliads in the trees and the Everglades, and the windswept oaks of Anastasia State Park in St. Augustine, when they walk in Payne's Prairie in Gainesville, and they understand the reality that our state is built on limestone and the impact that that has on the recharge of the Floridian aquifer, where so much of our water supply comes from, when they see the crystal clear water of Blue Springs State Park in Gilchrist County, when they experience looking with their bare eyes without a telescope and seeing the Milky Way in Kissimmee Prairie Preserve State Park, which is one of Florida's international dark sky designations, those experiences connect Floridians, and they make us want to protect the natural resources, the treasures that we have in our state for future generations. It is hard to care about protecting something that you've never seen. And that is why HB 109 matters. It matters because Floridians experiencing our state's beauty and diversity is actually very important. And we have a problem with access. This morning, I tried to reserve a site for the first weekend in the open period, a long weekend, from Thursday, January 4th to Sunday, January 7th, 2024. So we're 11 months out. As of 7 a.m. today, there were 22 of our state parks entirely full with no availability whatsoever for 11 months out. Now, as you would imagine, those that are full are the most desirable locations in the state. Now, the goal of this bill is simply to make sure that Floridians have a shot at access to camping in some of the most beautiful parks around the state. This bill simply opens reservations 1 month earlier to Floridians allowing those with a Florida driver's license to make reservations 12 months ahead of time instead of 11 months. Now, state parks are supported with our tax dollars, and Floridians ought to have the first shot at them. Members, this is the bill. I look forward to your questions.
Thank you for that explanation, Representative Kennedy. Members, questions? Questions of the sponsor? Representative Cheney, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair Buchanan. Thank you for the presentation, Representative. Giving a benefit to Floridians just by 1 month. Do you believe that's significant? That's enough? How did you come up with 1 month?
Representative Kennedy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that question. I think 1 month is sufficient. We value our visitors from around the country and around the world that come and visit our state parks, and certainly we want them, we welcome them. 1 month offers a sufficient amount of time for Floridians to make that all-important reservation.
Members, questions?
Follow-up?
Representative Cheney with a follow-up.
Let me rephrase. How did you come up with 1 month to believe that that's enough extra time for a Floridian?
Representative Kennedy.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that clarification. I believe that according to the conversations that we've had with the Department of Environmental Protection, with really those from around the state who have spoken, constituents as well as your constituents from a lot of places around the state, that has been the suggested amount of time that actually came from those of us, from those around the state who provided the feedback that really initiated this bill to begin with. This is a very grassroots bill. And I will tell you, if you don't know who people who camp, you should meet them because these are some passionate people. I have gotten emails from all around the state. There's a lot of excitement about this bill. And that 1 month period actually came from those who have experienced this challenge of making reservations.
Members, questions? Questions on the bill? Questions on the bill? Representative Bartleman, you're recognized.
Will they be getting s'mores when they register for the campsite?
Rep. Kennedy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that question. So I believe that s'mores, in fact, are one of the most important parts of camping, and I fully support the enjoyment of s'mores by all those who camp in our state parks. As a matter of fact, in addition to s'mores, I highly recommend the smell of bacon cooking on a campfire in the morning. If you've ever experienced that, I also highly recommend coffee when it's cool, when the mist is rising. There's nothing better. And actually, that matters a lot because what we're trying to do is create the opportunity for families, for groups, for individuals to have the kind of experiences that get cemented in their minds. And those experiences involve all the senses. And so the food that people associate with camping actually matters a lot. So I am pro s'mores, Rep. Bartleman. Thank you.
Thank you, and I will be pro your bill. You freshmen are getting away easy. What's wrong with you guys?
Members, questions. Questions on the bill. Questions. Any further questions? Seeing no further questions, are there amendments? There are no amendments. Is there public testimony on the bill? Public testimony. Seeing no public testimony, members, we're in debate on the bill. Representative Antone, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that passionate explanation of your bill. I've never seen a passionate explanation of a bill like that, and that was a good education for me, so thank you, and I'm voting for your bill.
Members, debate. Representative Mooney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the bill. This is very important. As Floridians, we do pay for those parks. And honestly, I have a ton of friends down in South Florida in my district that their vacations are planned out and they're travelers. And this bill is has so much significance that it's probably going to be lost because it seems so simple. This is a great bill for the Floridians in the state of Florida. So thank you for presenting this bill.
Members, debate. Further debate. Further debate. Seeing no further debate, Representative Canada, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I am passionate about this bill because I believe that opening access, greater access to Floridians will allow us to have the kinds of shared experiences that give us a real deep commitment to caring for our state, not for the next 5 years or 10 years, but for 50 years and 100 years from now, and that's the opportunity that we have. So I will be very grateful for a yes vote on this bill, and thank you for the opportunity to present it to you today.
Thank you for that close, Representative Kennedy. Missy, please call the roll.
Representatives Abbott.
Four.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
Oh. Alvarez.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Antone.
Yes.
Bartleman.
Yes.
Botana.
Yes.
Brackett.
Yes.
Posada Cabrera.
Yes.
Cassell.
Yes.
Cheney. Yes. Esposito.
Yes.
Hanshofsky.
Yes.
Mooney.
Yes.
Roth.
Yes.
Skidmore.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Trunell.
Yes.
Tuck.
Yes.
Chair Buchanan.
Yes. Members, by your vote, show the bill is reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Kennedy. I think
you
got off pretty easy today for your first bill, okay? Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Members, up next, we will be hearing from the Department of Citrus, which will be given by Steve Johnson, who's the chair of the Florida Citrus Commission. He's going to be providing us a little bit of an overview on the state of the citrus industry. And so right now, I'd like to welcome and thank Commissioner for being here, and you are recognized to present on the citrus industry.
Thank you, and thank you, and thank you for all of y'all the opportunity to come and share with you what I'm passionate about. Just tell you a little bit about me. I am Steve Johnson from Hardy County. I am a fourth generation citrus grower. Hopefully I have the fifth generation behind me in a couple of years. So this is why this is passionate, and this is why this means a lot to me. So we'll get started today. Make sure my clicker's going here. Okay. So if you can see, the Florida Department of Citrus was established in 1935 by growers for growers. It's been self-funded for 80 years. There's 11 members of that Citrus Commission, which are appointed by the governor. Executive agency of Florida government charged with marketing, research, regulation of the citrus industry. So our mission is to maximize consumer demand. So we want the Florida citrus products to ensure the sustainability and economic well-being of the Florida citrus grower, the citrus industry, and the state of Florida. So you can see the Florida citrus industry is a significant contributor to the economy. If you look at this map, you'll see up there we've got the northern, the Indian River District, the western, the central, and the southern. And encompassing all that is a lot of land, but also a lot of activities that go on. So we have 27 counties that have basically large-scale citrus production. We have roughly 375,000 acres of groveland. 344,000 acres are bearing. And I will tell you, with some of the money that the legislators given, those acres will continue to increase or be at least sustainable as we move forward. There's 25 registered packing houses that ship fruit, fresh fruit from this state to all over the world, whether that's Japan or China or Europe. That fruit goes all over the place. So I think that's a significant thing to remember. There's 18 registered processing facilities that process citrus juice and byproducts. As you all know, there's nothing wasted on that orange, so that byproducts are just as important as citrus itself, whether that's cattle feed or whether it's oils or acids that are used. So you look at the total contributions of the Florida citrus industry in 2021. So industry output, which is sales revenue, is $6.39 billion. Now, that's one industry. That's one ag industry that is contributing $6.9 billion. Employment, roughly is 32,000-some-odd jobs. If you think about that, I live in Hardy County. That's how many people live in Hardy County. So that's basically a whole entire county that is employed by the citrus industry. Value added, It's $2.8 billion. State and local tax contributions is $151 million. And those are all estimates. Obviously, those could be greater, I think. So economic marketing research overview. As you'll see, hurricane impacts from Ian and Nicole were not favorable to the citrus industry. When you have those two-inch round things hanging on trees and you get 150-mile-an-hour wind, they tend to depart from the tree and end up in other places. So we did have a little bit of damage from that. If you go all the way back to the beginning of 2022, we also had a freeze. And then also if you throw in Hurricane Nicole. Primary losses was due to fruit, but you can see the total losses are estimated between $417 million to $675 million on those losses. Primary impacts was because of the destructive weather. And, you know, you talk about, we got in there about damage from freeze, winds, and standing water. So in our local area where I live, we had 21 inches of rain in a 24-hour period. So that's hard for any crop, especially citrus, to withstand that. And so we've got some long-term effects that we're not really sure what they'll do yet. 375,000 acres is what the state faced production losses from a result of the hurricanes. Production losses were at $146 million to $304 million. So you look at what we've lost as far as producers, but then you look at what we've lost in production losses. Early estimates from tree damage is 8 to 11%. We think that could go up just because of the standing water, and we don't know what the long-term effects are of that on the trees. Quick side note, with greening, we lose 30% of the roots in the first year. So when we have that standing water, that is one more reason that we don't know the long-term effects. Total citrus tree replacement damages are estimated at $271 to $371 million. Future tree mortality, as I said, could be discovered more. And producers' operations are also experienced heavy infrastructure damage, whether that's barns, whether that's, y'all have heard about the CUPS program where we're growing citrus under cover. Those things get lost. And some of those things are uninsurable. USDA forecasts and expectations for 2023 season. Overall, Florida citrus production forecast of 20 million boxes. That's oranges, grapefruit, and tangerines represents 56% decline when compared to 21-22. Orange production, as you can see there, 18 million boxes, 56% decline. Grapefruit, 1.5 million, 55% decline. Specialty tangerines, 500,000, which is a 33% decline. Florida processors must rely on imports and domestic receipts to meet current demand, which may impact future market access. And so that's why it's important that our marketing stays strong and we market Florida. We don't want imports coming in. Florida is projected to account for nearly 70% of all domestically produced orange juice in 2023. So that is important. That's an amazing accomplishment that we can do that. And I think that's exciting, and we all should be excited about that. Demand for Florida citrus products will remain strong, but reduced overall availability due to that. So let's switch gears a little bit as we talk about scientific research and development. As we get into propagating more trees, you'll realize that that's what we got to have so we can make that land that we have and try to put more in there. So you'll see for the fiscal year, $1 million was apportioned. Appropriated to the Florida Department of Citrus Program for expedited propagation for HLB-tolerant resistant trees. Additionally, the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services received $2 million for the Accelerated Budwood Initiative. Together, we provided that to nurseries for a quick ramp-up that availability of trees, which you should start seeing some of them come out in August and hopefully keep going from there. Varieties in that include the Donaldson, the Kearney 2 and 3, and the Roble. And some of those varieties have been around for a while. It's just that we've discovered that they are escape trees. 25 citrus nurseries around the state are participating in this program. The material has been distributed, and the varieties have begun to be grown. There is an effort to continue to find escape trees, and when we talk about escape trees, those are trees that we find out in the field that don't seem to be affected by greening, and we have to figure out why that is. And there's obviously some reason for that, and we have to continue to find that. So then talk about global marketing. So earlier, you know, we talked about how we ship fruit to all over the place, and so that's why this is important. So our strategic approach is to drive awareness of health and nutrition benefits of orange juice. And so it is a nutritious, it's the amazing wellness drink, as we call it. We want to promote and protect Florida orange juice. Driving sales is our key thing for to audiences about health. And so we talk about target audiences. So we have primary shoppers, we have light returned OJ drinkers, and we have lapsed buyers. And so it's easier for us to get the lapsed buyers back. And so that's why it's important to keep it in front of them and get those guys and retain those as orange juice drinkers, and then hopefully work on getting new OJ drinkers. You can see here at the chart, if you look, this is our integrated programming. This is what we've went after, whether it's Instacart, Hulu, whatever it may be, so that we can be at the top of their browsers. And so when people go on there to buy, then that's what they see. And they say, oh, well, I need to get that. That's a healthy drink. That's what I need to do. And you can see there we do web support, media outreach, events, influencers, issues and monitoring, and e-commerce. I know this is kind of a busy slide, so I'm not going to waste a lot of time on it. But you, if you look at those numbers and dig in and see what the attributed sales by retail partner, let's take Walmart, for example. Everybody in here either loves or hates Walmart. And so it's $25 million just right there when we've invested $19 million, when we've already returned $25 million in sales. And then so if you add them all together and you look at that number, the return on investment is huge, probably unheard of, in my opinion. I wish my advertising for my business worked that well, but it doesn't. So, but I think that's a tribute to our staff and to what we've done in order to make that dollar stretch even further. And this is an update as of today. And so this is attributed sales with Walmart once again taking the top at $30 million. So Henry Ford said, stopping advertising to save money is like stopping your watch to save time. So think about that again. Stopping advertising to save money is like stopping your watch to save time. If you stop to get it back going, it takes a long time. You know, it's kind of like some of the old tractors that we've got on the farm. Sometimes it's easier to roll them downhill than it is roll them uphill. So that's why it's important to keep advertising going. So our consumer reacquisition cost, acquiring a new customer, and this was done by Harvard Business School, acquiring a new customer is anywhere from 5 to 25 times more expensive than retaining a customer. So retention is what we're after. We want to retain those customers. We talk about lapsed buyers. Those lapsed buyers are somebody that hasn't bought in 30 to 60 days. Those are easier to get back than trying to start somebody new. So consumers today are subject to as many as 4 to 10,000 messages a day. So think about that as you look on your phone or you look on Instagram or you look on Snapchat or whatever social media you're on, how many advertisements pop up. And so it's hard. It's a busy world. It's a busy thing as we look at. And so that's why it's important for us to reacquisition the ones that we have for lapsed buyers. So with that, I'll close. I will tell you that Florida citrus growers appreciate what y'all do for us. We appreciate y'all helping us. We are resilient growers. We are growers that are constantly looking for new ways to do things better. And we appreciate y'all's help. With that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Members, do we have some questions? Representative Botana, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation, Chair. What percentage of the citrus is currently affected by greening, and what testing are you doing to?
Commissioner Johnson, you're recognized.
So thank you for that, and that's a good question. So Steve Johnson's estimate is 95% probably is infected with greening. We really don't test for it anymore. Those kind of days are over. We just know we have it. We're dealing with it. And so we've learned new technologies and new ways to grow with it, whether it's new varieties or new methods of doing things.
Representative Bartleman with a question.
Thank you, Chair. I just had a question about the hurricane losses. Do the groves that are impacted, do they have the ability to purchase small business insurance to cover those losses, or how do you deal with those losses, or does the state intervene, or what happens? Thank you.
Mr. Johnson, you're recognized.
Yeah, so we are able to buy crop insurance. It is very expensive. And crop insurance is kind of like your home insurance. It doesn't make you whole. It just helps you say, all right, I'm willing to do this again another year. And so it does not cover us. You know, you talk about production losses and what we have. You know, we're spending $2,000 an acre. Crop insurance roughly will reimburse us $800 to $1,000 an acre. So we still lose half of that. There is some federal aid that we're going after to try to accomplish that. That is all encompassed, though, with all ag, not just citrus. So there are a few programs like that. A couple years ago, we had the block grant that the state did for us. That was in Hurricane Irma years. And so that really helped us out and helped us go forward from there.
Representative Mooney, you're recognized with the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation. As an orange juice drinker, I appreciate it.
Good.
And what I don't want to see happen is that orange we enter the state of Florida become just a person standing there. question is, how is the industry dealing with what we know as fact is happening across the state of Florida, the intrusion of suburbia into your farmlands? I mean, is there any kind of process in place that you are working for to protect what you have and acquire more land? Because every time you drive either 27 or the turnpike, we see less trees and we see more houses. And at some point, you're not going to become sustainable unless there's something in place. So what if anything, are you doing?
Commissioner Johnson, you're recognized.
So as an industry, no, there's nothing in particular that we're doing. I can tell you that there's a mindset that this is a generational thing, and this is something that we want to continue to do. The other thing I will tell you is we're learning to do more with less. And what I mean by that is in the old days, you'd have 100 to 110 trees to the acre. Nowadays, we've got 200 to 400 trees to the acre. So we are learning to do more with less and trying to get that production on a lot less smaller scale. Because obviously with that coming in, we run into issues with, you know, water issues and just, you know, dealing with the public.
Representative Roth, you're recognized with a question.
Good morning, Chairman Johnson. It sounds so good to say Chairman Steve Johnson. That almost sounds like you could be a state representative. How are you doing, sir? I do have a couple of questions. As a farmer, I'm very concerned, you know, starting with Hurricane Irma and now with Ian, you know, the citrus industry was poised to rebound in 2018 and then Irma hit. And so we've been really declining in production, and a lot of people don't understand that sugarcane can withstand, you know, high winds and have some losses, but in citrus you probably have a 90% loss sometimes from a hurricane. So my concern is I'm looking for some optimism as we think about it as a legislature. We're continuing to put money into research and to advertising and trying to help the federal government, encourage the federal government to give you emergency relief, which they're not doing a very good job of. So I'm kind of looking for some good news in the bad news. One thing I hear about is a new chemical injection that is occurring now. Is this something that's a pilot program or just started to help with greening?
Commissioner Johnson, you're recognized.
So a lot of questions there, Representative Roth, but I'm used to that with you. So so let me give you the optimism first. Let's start with the optimism. I think that's important. There are a lot of things we're doing. So with greening, you know, I shared we lose 30% of your roots in the first year. And I think that's important because then when we do have a storm, that tree is weakened. So with the new varieties we talked about, whether it's the Donaldson or the Kearney or the Robles, that we figured out are a little resistant to greening, that helps us in establishing a more healthier tree. If it's healthier, it can withstand more. And so that's important. So that's where we've got to go. So that brings us right into, you talked about the trunk injections. That is not a pilot program. That is something that is going very, very fast right now. There's a lot of crews out doing that, a lot of people doing it. I will share with you, we've got 12 guys doing that. We cover about 100 acres a day doing that. So it is very positive. The results that we've seen from that on the trials that we've done, the trees in 3 to 4 years have totally, you know, I wouldn't say totally rebounded, but they have probably 90% back to where they need to be. And as that tree is healthier, it can withstand cold weather better, it can withstand storms better, it can withstand water standing on it better. So we are turning the curve, and we are doing better. One of the things I'll share with you, talk about those losses, those were mainly from early crops. Our Valencia crops look really good, and I think they'll continue to look good. They have survived, and that's where our better quality is. Our early crop is used just basically to get the plants running, get some juice in the tanks, and get things going. So to answer your question about, you know, optimism and worried about stuff, I appreciate you being worried, and I understand that, and that makes perfect sense. But I can promise you that we are working on this, and we are probably at a better spot than we've been in the last 10 years with this.
Follow up, please.
And Commissioner, just to follow up on that, could you share with the committee what you expect or estimate the cost per acre as it relates to performing those trunk injections?
Yeah, so obviously that depends on how many trees you have per acre. So that number, it can range. I can tell you that number is ranging anywhere from $150 an acre to $350 an acre. Because you are doing each tree, if we have a grove that's got 100 trees to the acre versus a grove that's got 200 trees to the acre, obviously the cost is different. Labor does seem to be the biggest cost in that because you have to have somebody physically going through. There is some research being done on a type injection rig where you can just walk by and just, you know, I call bang stick them. But right now we are currently drilling holes in the trees and sticking that injector in there to do that.
Thank you. Representative Roth with follow-up.
Yes, sir. I have a couple other questions, Chair, if that's okay.
Yes, sir.
One of the things that I think about is marketing and going in a different direction. You know, the big push, you know, what I don't know what it was, 15, 20 years ago, was not from concentrate. Is there where are we at in terms of fresh fruit sales? Is fresh fruit sales declining? Is it possibly increasing? And is there any research being done to show the health benefits of eating fresh fruit versus drinking orange juice?
Commissioner Johnson, you're recognized.
So we are working on research with different things with fresh fruit versus juice and all that. The fresh fruit sales seem to be very stable. I will tell you, the only reason you would see any decline in that is because of the decline in production. But the number of packing houses and people that are wanting to pack fruit and push fruit out there, that is growing. A lot of the market in the Northeast is continuing to grow, which is encouraging. There is tons of research being done on, you know, whether it's Hesperidium, I probably didn't say that word right. And there's different things that are within orange juice and within the orange itself, and how do we use that? And the health benefits from it.
Representative Roth.
And just one more question in terms of acres planted and mechanical harvesting. I did have the privilege of driving from Moorhaven to Howie in the Hills on 27 this week, and was very encouraged to see a lot of new trees being planted. Some of them looks like they've been planted a year or so ago. So I'm curious about what the trend of planting new trees, you know, in the face of adversity. And secondly, is part of the reason that you're doing more trees per acre is to make it harvesting easier, shorter trees, mechanical harvesting. You understand?
Yes.
Commissioner Johnson, you're recognized.
So to answer that, that's just real easy. No, the reason we're doing, because land costs so much, we can't really afford to go out and buy hundreds of acres of land to put citrus on. And these newer varieties, and with greening, the trees don't grow as large as they used to. Used to, you had a tree that was 24 foot tall. You know, you couldn't park five pickup trucks around it. But those days are over. We don't have those anymore because of greening. Different varieties, things are smaller. And so we've realized we can put more per acre. So that's our ultimate goal behind that. So you talked about mechanical harvesting. There's not, I don't know there's any mechanical harvesting being done currently, to my knowledge. I had a mechanical harvester. I will tell you, when H2A came on the scene, that kind of killed the mechanical harvesting because it was very expensive. It beat the trees up. Greening caused that even to be worse of a problem. So we all went back to the manual labor.
You good? Ranking Member Skidmore with a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for the information. I think you said you're fifth generation citrus grower, or you're fourth generation. You are hoping the fifth generation comes up. Historically, how has the citrus industry changed? I remember moving here back in the very early 70s,
and stopping at the Welcome Center and getting in my free glass of orange juice with the rest of my siblings. Does that still happen? And I just feel like the citrus industry continues to shrink, either through development, through canker, or other diseases that sort of really made a big hit. So in terms of the reduction of the groves, does that transfer to a reduction of the yield, understanding that maybe there's more trees per acre, but is the yield sufficient, and is there opportunity to grow that yield? Secondly, I'll let you do them all at the same time, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, yeah.
Where do we get some of the citrus that is imported into the state of Florida? My daughter loves those little cuties. I'm assuming we don't grow those here. That's it. Those are the two questions that I have.
Great questions. Commissioner Johnson, you're recognized.
Yeah, so thank you. So first of all, go back to the welcome program. We still do that. That is done by the DOC, and we gladly do that. And please go by and get free orange juice. You know. So the other question was about how do we continue the yield. Yes, obviously it's going down because grove acreage are shrinking, and we can't make that up with planting more trees to the acre. Personally, how we continue to grow our business in that aspect is we either take land that we already have, or we actually go in and we lease some grove from developers when they come in and buy that land. And so we try to lease it until they decide what they're going to do with it, so it doesn't take it out of production until later. So there are different ways of doing that and different ways to do that. And your other question, I'm trying to remember now. Oh, yes, where do they come from? And you're talking about the cuties, sorry. So most of the fruit comes from Brazil or Mexico currently. There's a little bit that comes in from South America, very little from that. The cuties, for example, are actually California, is where most of those come from. We do have a variety that we're experimenting with that to try to compete with that here in the Florida market. Backed up in Representative Trunau's area, there is some crunchy tangerines, as we call them, and those are being pretty successful. There's opportunity, there's things that are happening out there for that.
Representative Cassell with a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for being here. As one of those light-returned OJ drinkers, I'm feeling a bit guilty, so I'll be going to get some OJ when this committee ends later today. But my question is, I have the fortunate opportunity with other members here to sit on the appropriations aspect of this silo, and I just want to make sure that we are committed to you as you've been committed to this state and your industry has been committed to this state, that we're making sure you're getting the funding that you needed. So whether it be marketing, whether it be research, do you believe there's anything that this committee and or that appropriations committee can do to continue to help your industry grow and thrive?
Well, of course. Sir Johnson, you're recognized.
So, well, of course, yeah. I mean, you opened the door for that. So let me answer that. Obviously, marketing is a huge thing. We talked about that today. If you lose your marketing, you lose your industry. And so even though our production goes down, I think it's very important we keep our marketing, and I think it's important that we keep pushing our marketing, because when we do get all these trees turned around, and Representative Roth talked about this, all these young trees that are in the ground, when they come on and they're starting production, we need to make sure we can move that product. So marketing to me is a biggie. That's where we need to put the majority of the emphasis in. New varieties I think would be a good example. What we have discovered so far is probably not the end of the road. There's always something bigger and better. They're always making better cars, better, you know, boats, whatever you want to call it. So I think that's the same thing with varieties, and I think that's important. One of the other things I think is continuing our research. There's obviously stuff out there that we don't know anything about yet that we could learn from. And so I think those three things are probably the biggest thing that we need help with and continue to fund, and maybe even fund a little more. We'd be glad to take that conversation to appropriations and ask for more. But we do appreciate what y'all have done in the past for us.
Representative Cassell, you have a follow-up? Okay. Questions, members? Representative Trunau, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, for those of us that may not understand greening, can you tell where it came from and how it affects the tree?
Commissioner, you're recognized.
Yeah, so it's real simple. Obviously, it came over from China. I think it's where it originated from in South America. It's a little bitty psyllid that spreads it. The psyllid looks like a gnat. You can't really see it as you go. When it infects that tree, it may show up in 6 months. It may show up in a year. We don't know, but it shows up. Like I shared with you before, the first year, we lose 30% of our roots in the first year. So we've had to learn how to grow differently. We've learned how to grow backwards almost, where we do a lot more little nutritionals on the head versus the bottom, and so we kind of have to balance that. And we pull a lot more soil samples and leaf analysis than we've done in the past so that we can compare the two to see where we got to get the right nutrients in the right place. Biggest thing with greening is trying to stop the spread. We talked about the injections earlier. We'll have to do that once a year because a tree will get reinfected as that psyllid goes around. Cold weather doesn't seem to slow that psyllid down. Most people said, oh, we had a freeze, so the psyllids are gone. Not totally true. We found them encased in ice. So it's a treacherous little booger. But that's kind of what greening is. Greening does show up in the leaves first, typically. You'll see it where the veins turn a little yellow. And so you realize then, and here's how I compare it on layman's terms. It's kind of like heart disease. It stops the phloem and xylem. So as that phloem and xylem stops, it's kind of like your arteries and your veins. When they stop, you kind of start, things start dying off. Your hands get numb, your feet get tingly. That's what happens to that orange tree. And so that's what greening does to that tree. It slows that down, and we've got to figure out how to combat that.
Representative Trunow with the follow-up.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, you said earlier your budget comes from self-funding. Can you speak to that?
Commissioner, you recognize.
So, yeah, there's a box tax that is implemented on all citrus. And so the commission decides that rate every year. We have continued to, that rate stays about the same usually. But we have a tax that's on every box, whether it's fresh fruit, whether it's juice, whatever it is, that is taxed and comes back to us. Or does that come back to the commission?
Representative Trunow.
Follow-up. Thank you, Chair. So how much of your budget comes from the self-funding, and then how much comes from the legislature?
Commissioner, you're recognized.
So the legislature last year gave us about $17 million for marketing, but our core budget that we get from tax, I don't remember the total number because of production obviously going up and down, but that money is about $8 million that we spend on at marketing, and then we have administrative cost out of that, and then we have some regulatory stuff that we do out of that to monitor whether it's fruit licenses or whether it's other regulatory items that we have to monitor.
Representative Mooney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A quick question. So early in the presentation, it was about roughly $7 billion. What effect does dumping have on your industry from farming outside of our borders?
Commissioner, you're recognized.
If any.
So obviously it has an effect. So when processors can import juice cheaper than what they can buy it from us from, that's where we get in. And it's not necessarily called dumping, but it's an issue. Our costs are a lot higher here. For example, our minimum wage with H-2A right now is $14.33 an hour. Our minimum wage here in Florida is 11. So you go to Mexico, you go to Brazil, theirs is $4 and $5. So that's huge. And they don't have regulations on chemicals. So they can actually ship it across cheaper than what we can produce it for sometimes. And so that's the key behind that, though, is Florida has the quality, and that's what we need. And so they need our juice to mix it, and we need their juice in order to cover our sales. And so it's really not a dumping issue, but it's more of a economic issue.
Representative Roth, did you have a question?
Yes, sir, Chair. Thank you. I have one more question. So, Commissioner, you did mention H-2A a little bit. I'm just curious because I know there's some activity in the legislature concerning housing and H-2A housing and maybe making it easier to do H-2A housing. Places like Polk County, you know, we're talking about out in a citrus grove area. Could you explain, give us a general idea, you know, with H-2A housing, how difficult it is to build new housing, or is there a big need for it? My understanding is that the citrus industry is one of those industries that really does more with H-2A housing than any other industry in Florida, and does very well with it. So I'm just curious about the housing situation.
Commissioner, you're recognized.
Yeah, so, and I can tell you that because I am an H-2A employer. Quality housing is the issue. There is housing, but quality housing is the issue. And as far as building, I'll give you a prime example. In the home county that I live in, Hardy County, if you decide to build a new facility, you have to put it on 40 acres. So I have to have 40 acres, and it has to go on that 40 acres just to even get my permit submitted. So that's very difficult. It's hard to find a 40-acre block anywhere and say, okay, I'm going to take out the middle 5 acres and I'm going to put H-2A housing. So that's very difficult. The other thing that really gives us a fit is fire code, because they look at it as dormitory-style housing or hotel housing, and so we have to have fire suppression. We have to have sprinkler systems. We have to have a road that is here, prime example, I had a project that we were working on. It was down a two-mile dirt road, a county-owned dirt road, and they wanted me to pave the dirt road because so the fire trucks could get down there. And I said, well, that's a county road. That's not Steve Johnson's road. And so that was kind of some of the battles that we face. The other thing is like anything else, when you go to put a permit in for that, everybody shows up. So you get, 50 people that show up to a planning and zoning meeting against it, and I'm the lonely guy there for it. It's tough. It's tough. So a lot of it is politics, but a lot of it is just regulation.
Members, questions? Representative Steele, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I commend you for staying in the business. We just pushed a grove about 5 years ago, and we're not going back. But is there any conservation easement like that we can do? Because Georgia does a lot of things, like for the Bob White Initiative. They saw that the quail population was dropping. The state came in to protect that. I mean, I see you guys as an endangered species. And, I miss the smell. I miss the smell and the aroma of, Dade City, because we used to have oranges all over the place, and we don't have that anymore. Is there anything that we can do that can, benefit through conservation?
Commissioner, you're recognized.
So that's a great idea, actually. And that's something that we haven't really looked at. Typically, that's your farmland or your cattle land. Because we are in there all the time, doing different things, pulling trees out, putting trees in. Conservation usually has not fallen into that. If that's something that is a possibility, I would love to have some conversation with you about that and figure out ways that we could work through that. Because, unfortunately, we are, as you said, a dying breed sometimes. People look at us that way. But we are iconic. I mean, we're on all the license plates in Florida, and I think that's important. And I think that citrus is not going anywhere. It may look a lot different. It may be under screen. It may be under protective cover. It may be, we turn into just how we look differently, but I think it's going to be around.
Follow-up? Rep. Steele, follow-up.
Statement. So in Georgia, they allow you to cut trees back. And then still replant under their easement, conservation. And you still own the land. It's not they're buying the land and letting you lease it back. You own the land.
Commissioner, you're recognized.
I will tell you this. There are some programs through FSA that we do participate in that help with some of that. It's CRP, Conservation Reserve Program. And so we do participate in some of that because it's based on whether you slow-release fertilizers, how you do with your tailwater recovery and this thing. So there are a few programs like that, but it doesn't pay very much. I'll be honest with you. It's not very lucrative. Paperwork's more than the money, probably.
Members, questions? Commissioner, I have a question. As it relates to this last storm season, you look at the numbers, significant losses. How does that compare to previously active storm seasons?
Go back to 2004, we had Hurricane Charley, Francis, Jean, Wilma, whatever, all those that crossed across the state. That was probably the last time we had a multiple storms. Hurricane Irma, the problem with her, whatever you want to call it, was just it was so large. And Ian was kind of the same way. It was just so large and so massive that it affected the entire state. That's really the problem. Like a Charley, for example, when we had Charley, it was very tight. It was very narrow.
Similar path,
but it was just so small that it didn't affect the whole industry like it did. So the biggest problem I think that we saw out of Ian was the water, the amount of water that we had. Like I shared with you, the 21 inches in 24-hour period, there's just, in Florida, when it's flat, it just builds up. It doesn't go anywhere. And so that's a problem.
Thank you for that. And Commissioner, you mentioned in the presentation 375,000 commercial citrus acres. How has that changed over the last decade in terms of productive acres?
Probably about half. So when I graduated from University of Florida in 1998, there was 250 million boxes in the industry. And today you saw we're probably going to have 18 million boxes.
Yeah, that's significant over a decade. And was a lot of this as a result, and there's been a number of things, grainy, various diseases, and storm seasons. One particular area of impact more than another, or is it just kind of a culminate and development?
So I think really greening has been the biggest issue. When we go from producing 500-600 boxes to the acre to 200 boxes to the acre because of a disease, that's the biggest thing. You know, back to Keith Trunau's, or Representative Trunau's question about where did it come from? Well, it came in through the ports. And so that's why it's important that we continue to monitor those ports and we keep those bugs at bay. You know, all that stuff that's coming in and imported, whether it's from other countries or whether it's from, you know, our neighboring islands down in the south, those are the issues that we face. Those are the consequences of what happens when that happens.
Commissioner, and just for the committee's clarification, what does the life cycle look like for and this goes to what Representative Trunau was getting at earlier, if left untreated, infected with greeny, how does that impact yield and life cycle of the tree?
So now when you say untreated, you mean like no fertilizer, no water, or just don't?
No, we're fertilizing water, but we're not doing trunk injections or?
Probably changes based on variety, but just to give you an average, I'd say that once you're infected, you probably got 5 years. If you just kind of keep your basic program, if you do nothing, you probably got a year. With the technologies and the new things that we've discovered, we're getting 10 to 12 years out of it.
Yeah, we had some citrus in the back of, right in back of our house is a little home orchard, and you know, it was largely wiped out within 2 years of being infected, so that's significant. Members, any more questions? Any more questions? Commissioner, we really appreciate you coming in and kind of giving us an idea of where the industry's at today, giving us an overview of the citrus industry. Really appreciate all you're doing, so thank you for joining us today. Members, I want to thank everyone for their participation here today. Great questions, and we'll look forward to seeing everyone next committee week.
Thank you all.
Seeing no further business before the committee, Representative Tuck moves we rise without objection. We are adjourned.